Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm gonna tell
you what you need. All right, fourth quarter of the program begins right now, and you need to know that this is the final weekend of the world's biggest spa sale at Family Leisure. Dennis and all the guys and gals have got you covered. Locally owned and operated for a quarter century, that is Family Leisure. You got any questions? Give them a call, 913-888-7727. Find them online at familyleisure.com. See them in person at K10 and Ridgeview. Incredible selection on the spas right now. More than 20 different spas on display. They have a huge selection right now, and more coming in each week. It is the best time to get a spa. Still some great nights to enjoy a spa right now. Relaxing, get home, just chill right there and relax. I can't think of a better time than right now to get to Family Leisure. Mention 810 and save even more, whether you need some patio furniture, grill, maybe it's some theater seating. Going to be binge watching a bunch of shows, a massage chair, pool table, poker table. They have it all. It's basketball season for a lot of folks. Do you need the Gorilla basketball goal? They're the best. We got it at my house. We absolutely love it. You can raise it to whatever height you want. It's sturdy, in ground. It's absolutely fantastic. Family Leisure truly is where family and fun come to meet. It is the final weekend of the world's biggest spa sale, so make sure you take advantage of it at K10 and Ridgeview, online at familyleisure.com. Let's start with a little bit of NFL news, and there's actually quite a bit. We mentioned earlier that the Sunday game between the Bucs and Raiders, which was scheduled for the Sunday night slot, the 7:20 on NBC, is now going to be played at 3:05 on Fox. Seahawks and Cardinals moves to Sunday night because the Raiders are placing four starting offensive linemen and safety Jonathan Abram on the reserve COVID list after all five players were deemed high-risk contacts today. This according to ESPN's Paul Gutierrez, who covers the Raiders. That game may be in danger of not being played or postponed, so they get it out of the Sunday night slot. They move in the Seahawks and Cardinals that clearly have a better picture right now when it comes to the COVID protocols. Ravens making a move to improve their defense, already a great unit, but they've traded a third and a fifth-round pick, a conditional fifth-round pick, to the Minnesota Vikings for Yannick Ngakoue, so they get another guy up front along that front. They now have two of Jacksonville's top two defensive linemen from last year. Remember, they got Calais Campbell in the offseason, and they add Yannick Ngakoue now. So, basically, what we could say that the AFC Ravens are, and the Jags are just kind of ganging up on the Chiefs. They're conspiring to try to stop the Chiefs. We'll see if it matters. He had five sacks in six games. The Vikings actually gave up what right now projects to be a high second and a fifth for him. They now get what projects to be a very low third for him. So you're talking about a pick that was that could be somewhere in the, 32, 33, 34, 35 range that they gave down to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're going to get one that might be 93, 94, 95, 96. So even though second, third doesn't sound that far apart, it's really almost – it's going to be nearly two full rounds that they lost to get six games. But we talked about this a lot in the first segment. Once you don't think you're good enough, man, eject and tank and try to get one of the quarterbacks, preferably Trevor Lawrence. And I think that's what the Minnesota Vikings are doing. The Jets went down that road. The Jags went down that road already. There's at least three teams that, in my opinion, are officially tanking. Also for the Ravens, they're talking about bringing in wide receiver Dez Bryant to evaluate him. If it works out, they're going to sign him to the practice squad. Why?
I don't know. I first saw that story earlier. I thought, who? Like, for a second, I blanked. Like, I knew who Dez Bryant is. I'm like, wait a minute. I think Antonio Bryant. Who? What? I don't get it.
Isn't this the second time that they brought him in, though, to look at him? Didn't they look at him during the offseason?
I'm starting to wonder, what is – are guys becoming just absolute shills for agents?
He has not played since 2017.
Yeah, our agent's just like, hey, this is happening. He's going to talk to him. Oh, let me get this news out there because I got to be the first one on Twitter. And then it's really just made up. Or it was just a phone call. Hey, just checking. Are you still out there? Yeah. And so they get this going so that hopefully some other team rings their phone. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. Doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, Sterling Shepard's been activated for the Giants for tonight's game against the Eagles. Still virtually no reason for you to watch that game. But, you know, if you got some fantasy players in it, have at it. No Sanders for the Eagles. I think he's out for tonight's game, so get him out of there if you got him as one of your starting running backs in the fantasy department.
Yeah, on the night of the final presidential debate, the NFL did not exactly draw a winning hand to compete with
it. They thought that, yeah, this looked like it was going to be a good one, right? Like the Giants showed some promise at the end of last year. The Eagles, you know, oh, they're going to be healthy. They're going to be a real contender. No, hasn't worked out for them, that's for sure. Drew Lock got the win. Didn't play particularly great against the New England Patriots last week, but they got the win. They rode 101 yards from Philip Lindsay and a bunch of field goals to beat the New England Patriots. They now take on the Kansas City Chiefs, whom they've lost to 9 straight times. Drew Lock asked if the locker room is aware of that 9-game losing streak to the Chiefs.
Oh, without a doubt. It's apparent. It's been said, shoot, I probably had it told to me 3 or 4 times today, and we don't even get to be around each other. You know, we're doing all the virtual stuff. You hear it through virtual meetings, and it's being said. Be nice to maybe snap that streak, but it's definitely a known thing, and we're excited about giving that opportunity to be able to stop that.
You know, Derek Carr sounded a lot more confident coming into the game against the Chiefs. Drew Lock, to quote him directly, it'd be nice to maybe snap that streak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to run the kid down.
Of course, it's a second-year guy against a sixth-year guy. Or seventh-year. Yeah, seventh-year guy for Carr. So maybe that's it.
But. Yeah. It is. I just, you know, if I were to read something into it, I don't read a ton of confidence, which, listen, his team's not as good. I don't know what to tell you, but we'll see how he can perform against snow expected in that game. Patrick Mahomes looking forward to the snow. Vic Fangio asked if there is a quote-unquote best way to stop Mahomes.
The definition of a great quarterback to me is, one of the definition is, there's no one way to play him. You can't go pressure heavy. You can't just void yourself of pressure. You can't play all man. You can't play all zone. You got to mix it up because the great quarterbacks are too good. And this quarterback is definitely great. He's got great weapons. They got a great offensive scheme and they're really tough to beat. So there's no one way to play them, or people would have tried it. As you've seen the scores, nobody's kind of broken that code yet.
Maybe the Chiefs don't cover the 9.5, but this one seems very difficult for me. I don't know how you could possibly bet the Denver Broncos. Patrick Mahomes has lost 8 times in his career, 7 of those 8 times, or what is it, 9 times in his career. And 8 of the 9 times, the opposition scored 31 points. I don't see the Broncos getting to 31 points. And so if you can't put enough points on the board, I don't think you can beat the Chiefs. Maybe they can turn it into a rock fight and cover the 9.5. But I hate, you know, I don't like saying this because if the team's thinking the same way, then that's how you get stung. You know, they were good enough to beat the Patriots, but I don't see it.
I don't see him getting to 21 points.
No, I really don't either. Le'Veon Bell working with the club. We'll see what kind of contribution he'll make in this game against the Broncos. But more conversation today about what he brings, his locker room presence, right? Eric Bieniemy talking about Bell in the locker room. He was asked if he expected him to show any leadership to Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Well, here's the thing. I know, first of all, Le'Veon reached out to Clyde and had a conversation with him and asked him, you know, and told him, basically, I don't want to step on your toes, you know, which I want to know if you're okay with me coming in here. And he's a classy individual. It says a lot about the person who does not want to come up and disrupt the chemistry that we have. And so I do know this. The kid is a football junkie. He lives and dies for football. And then on top of that, we have strong enough leadership within that locker room to make sure that he's doing it the way we want it done. But what I expect from Le'Veon, I expect Le'Veon to be professional, you know, within this building. I expect him to represent the Kansas City organization. And also, too, at times when he feels comfortable to do it, I expect him to provide some leadership and just some knowledge and wisdom on what it takes to play at an elite level, you know what I mean, in this league for a consistent amount of time. And I hope he passes that down throughout the entire room.
You like the fact that he, you know, reaches out to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That says this isn't a guy that's coming in to be a big jerk. I mean, I thought that was a great story to kind of describe what he's been.
Yeah, I agree. And something that I don't know that I've heard any instance of, there aren't that many probably instances where that parallel this, an established guy coming in at the same time a rookie during the season. But it seems like every possible speed bump that people have wondered about with Le'Veon Bell as far as him coming here and chemistry and that type of thing have just been, you know, non-existent. I mean, he continues to, every time you turn around and hear something, we heard Ramon Foster last week talk about, you know, he was a good locker room guy, and the things we're hearing about him already this week from the Chiefs, once they finally got around to talking about him, have all led you to believe that he's going to fit in just fine and actually possibly be a plus in that locker room, particularly for the young players below him.
Yeah, I think they're in a good situation with Le'Veon Bell, and I liked what I heard when his Steelers teammates came out and said, "Hey, we didn't like that he was holding out, but he was never a problem when he was here."
Yeah,
right. I mean, that's all you needed to hear. And Andy Reid dismissed any conversation about that right away. And so far, so good with Le'Veon Bell. And I wanted to get one in. Greg Lewis, the wide receiver coach, was made available today. Byron Pringle has been throwing the football 3 times and caught all 3. Last year, he was throwing the ball 16 times and caught it 12 times. He's big. He's physical. You know, to me, he's fast. You know, look, while Mecole Hardman is having his struggles, like, I'm curious, like, maybe Pringle could do more things. Maybe not. Maybe it would be covered the same way. But I wanted to, you know, there had been a lot of talk about Hardman, and I asked Lewis what Pringle needs to do to get more playing time.
Well, it's not really anything that he has to get over. Like you said, it's a great group of receivers. And when any of them go in the game, you expect the same production out of everybody that steps on the field. When your number's called, make the most of that opportunity. And Pringle has done that each and every time he's been out there. And if his number's not called, he's affecting the game in other ways. But to say how does he get out there, all he needs to do is continue coming to work each day like he does, just like all the other guys do, and working. And those opportunities will come. It's only one ball out there getting thrown around. Everybody is working hard, and we just want to continue doing that. And when the ball finds you, make sure that you're ready to make that happen. And I think all of our guys across the board have done a great job of that. And that's why it is a tough group to get out there and get opportunities, because there's so many possibilities. But it's not anything, one specific thing. Yeah, here, Pringle, do this, and you'll get more reps. It's when can we count on you? And we can count on him, he's going out there. If we can't count on you, then we you don't go out there. We got to get that. And the guys we have, we can count on.
What do you make of that there at the end?
Yeah, that I was feeling good about it, and till the end, then I thought, is he saying that they don't believe they can count on him just yet, or that they don't think you can count on him as much as the other guys? I mean, the last line, the last part of that, maybe let you believe that maybe it's they can. They can, but not as much as the other guys. But that last part kind of almost turned me not the other direction, but at least kind of stopped me in my tracks a little bit. When we can trust you, you'll play more.
Yeah, I was like, so like, is he not knowing the offense? Is he not doing some things right? Like, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting. It's pretty good. First time I'm with you, it was all good. And then it's like, okay, well, we can trust you. But I would caution that, you know, it's I don't think he was saying we can't trust him.
Right.
Right? But it just creeps a little doubt in there. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting cut. A couple other nuggets for you before we take a break and talk a little bit about the Rays, how they were built, and what their future is with Zach Blobner from 620 DAE in Tampa. Alan Pulido is going to be available for Sporting Kansas City on Saturday when they take on the Rapids. That is good news. The NBA draft on November 18th is going to be virtual. It'll be at ESPN Studios in Bristol, Connecticut. That was announced by the NBA and ESPN today. The Twins, Nelson Cruz has been voted the Marvin Miller Man of the Year, and Braves first baseman Freddie Freeman picked as the Player of the Year in the annual Player's Choice Award by Major League Baseball players. And Jed Marshall, very happy today. You want to know why? Because it's Eat a Pretzel Day. Observe it. Go get yourself a pretzel, a bag of pretzels. Somehow celebrate the day with one of the great creations, the pretzel. We'll take a break. You're in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
If you disappear forever, it wouldn't make any difference.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt into the hour answer before Chris Taylor, who was the last Dodger to hit a postseason home run as the number 9 hitter.
I have no idea on that one.
Kurt Gibson in the 1988 World Series, pinch hitting in the 9 spot.
Ah, wow. Yeah, not bad. I like that one. I should have thought about it. I should have known there would be a crafty little reason as to why that would be it. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we were playing for there. Get it today, the Joe's app, the easiest way to get it. Download it wherever you get your apps. A couple of clicks and you're swinging by to pick it up curbside. Of course, all the Joe's are open as well, practicing all the safest protocols. That great Kansas City Barbecue, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Send it anywhere in the country at joeskc.com. Let's talk a little bit about the Tampa Bay Rays, one of the more interesting teams that could possibly be in this World Series. The number one seed in the American League, actually making it there. Zach Blobner covers the Rays for WDAE, 620 on the AM side, 95.3 on the FM side. He joins us here on our T-Mobile guest line. Zach, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Really enjoying the sports down here in Tampa Bay the last few weeks.
Yeah, not bad. A 4-2 Bucks team, a baseball team in the World Series, and a hockey team that wins the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's pretty good to be a Tampa sports fan right now. I'll get to the other teams here in a second, but what was the feeling on the Rays? Was there genuine excitement that they were good enough to win the World Series, or was it that they were going to be another team that gets in there and ultimately Rays fans feel heartbreak?
Well, I think, heading up to the World Series, a lot of people in Tampa Bay felt very confident that the team could make it to the World Series, the Yankees being their toughest competition, both in the division and just throughout the AL in general. But now that they're in the World Series and people kind of are believing a little bit more, there is some concern about the bats and being able to keep up with that Dodgers lineup, to be honest with you. I mean, we're certainly excited, and from covering this team, you know that there's a lot of strengths and that they do have some things maybe edge-wise when it comes to the bullpen compared to L.A. But when it comes to, at the plate, and this is weird to say after game two, where obviously the Rays out-hit and, outscored the Dodgers, but there's a lot of concern through, if it's a seven-game series, being able to keep up on that side of things.
I've been told that the Rays get really good TV ratings, that there actually is, that like people see the stadium, the ballpark in normal times, right? Not this year, but and they're like, oh, nobody cares about the Rays. But that's not really the case. Is that correct? Is that accurate that they actually do draw really well from a television standpoint? It's just that they won't draw to that ballpark?
That's pretty accurate. I mean, we don't have all the numbers we'd like to, but we're told that constantly from the front office over at the Tampa Bay Rays organization. And one thing we do know is that they just signed a massive TV deal about a year ago. So that was encouraging to that point. And one of my favorite facts that I point out all the time is outside of Tampa Bay, we got Orlando about an hour and a half down I-4. And their ratings for watching baseball here in Tampa Bay has been steadily going up every year for like 6 or 7 years now. So not just Tampa Bay, but you reach out to Orlando as well, and just collectively, the numbers are very good when it comes to watching this team, and we're certainly feeling the effects of that now that they've made another deep postseason run, and expect them to expound on those ratings even more next year.
I certainly champion what the Rays do, right? Like, I know people get excited about, the star player. I mean, nobody wants to see Patrick Mahomes leave Kansas City, right? And we had, when the Royals won their championship, their most recent championship in 15, Sal Perez is a fan favorite. Alex Gordon, who just retired, is a fan favorite. We love to see those guys. you know, small market, and we're also seeing the Royals, who didn't move on from many of those guys, have now lost 100 games each of the last 2 years, and who knows what this year would have been. They righted the ship a little bit at the end, but they didn't move any of those assets. The Rays are the exact opposite. They will move anyone and everyone, and almost, you know, they will move everyone. Like when they're about ready to lose control of a guy, or when they've only got a couple of years left and they say this is his maximum value, they move him. Is that appreciated and supported by the fans, or does that end up upsetting the fans and maybe part of why they haven't got as much traction as they would like?
Oh, fans definitely hate that aspect of it. And that's something that'll never go away. But when they're doing well and they're being successful, and again, they're in a World Series, can you really be that mad at it? Can you argue with it? And then they are finding ways to lock up some of their guys. Blake Snell, who you saw in Game 2, signed a multi-year deal a season ago. Brandon Lau, who had the two home runs, they gave him a Longoria-type deal where before he even came out of spring training, they inked him to like six-plus years with options. So they're smart about it now, and they are showing that they'll ink some of these guys a little bit. But, yeah, it's very picky and choosy for which, quote-unquote, stars and homegrown talent they're going to keep around. I mean, but they're smart about their deals, as you mentioned as well. Randy Arozarena, the sweetheart of the postseason for the Tampa Bay Rays, setting all these numbers at the plate. He's a guy who they have control over for at least, I think, until 2023 or 2024. So even though they haven't signed him to a big deal, younger guy, he's a rookie, they know they're going to have him around for at least a few years before they even got to think about potentially flipping him elsewhere. So it is frustrating for fans to know guys are kind of in and out. But at least with the core of the team right now, there is a lot of control over those players, which is encouraging, even if necessarily the deals don't follow.
All right, tell me, they pioneered, right, the opener. They've got a very deep, diverse bullpen. They seem to have no hesitation to going to it. How in Game 1 was Tyler Glasnow left out there for 112 pitches? Like, they would be the team that, you know, if they were going to, someone's going to be critical of them, it'd be that they took a guy out way too early, not that they left him in too long. What happened there, and what was their explanation?
Yeah, so Kevin Cash, very interesting guy. Love him to death. He's always had these, like, unique moves or non-moves in that scenario that just make us scratch our head. Like, whenever we think we have an idea of what he wants to do and how he wants to go about his business, especially with his pitchers and how long he leaves them in, he throws, no pun intended, a curveball and does something like that where he'll leave Glasnow in for way longer than anybody thought he would. From what we were told, the thought process going into it was different from the fact that they were losing in that game, as opposed to if they had been winning, he would have been yanked like Snell was at 88 pitches or whatever it was in Game 2. But Kevin Cash thinks so far ahead, and he's done this all postseason. It's not just about Game 1 or Game 2. He's already thinking about bullpen guys and pitching moving into Games 5, 6, and 7. He's always so far ahead. And by leaving Glasnow in there, the thought process was, we're already down. I don't want to burn through any more guys. Even now that there's days off, which there wasn't in the ALDS and ALCS, I'm still being very mindful of the bullpen arms, which as much as I like Glasnow, Snell, and Morton for the starting three, the bullpen's the main strength of this ball club.
Yeah, no doubt. And then that's the one thing I said after that game was, I said, okay, I'll buy it if you're saying we're already giving up on this game. Right, we're bailing, and it's out of hand, and I'm not reckoning what I need for, you know, tomorrow, and get that game done as well. How much conversations, like, I have this theory that, like, the Rays are so home run dependent that, you know, and generally speaking, home runs get neutralized in the postseason. That has not been the case for them. How much have they benefited from no off days? And being able, you know, teams not being able to just reload the bullpen. And, you know, the Royals played the off days like it was nobody's business back in 15, to where you were only seeing their top three relievers for the most part. The other guys got in there. But if the game mattered, like, they were able to just throw their best. How much have the Rays benefited from the fact that there have been no off days until today?
Oh, immensely. I mean, and that's the thing. Even with there being off days now and being able to get their best bullpen arms, some freshness and some rest. I mean, they're just deeper bullpen-wise than any other team in baseball really right now. I mean, I don't know how else to slice it. And knowing that and knowing there's no days off, if you can get through the starting pitching of the opposing team, whether it's the Astros, in this case obviously the Dodgers, whatever team it may be, you're going to have a lot more chance to be successful at the plate than your opponent does. So I think that not having the off days has helped the Rays continue to advance and win ball games. At the end of the day, though, I don't know if it's obviously helping them get hits, and those home runs have been very timely. It's hard to feel like you can keep counting on that to happening, yet here we are tied up 1-1 in the World Series, and we continue to watch it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. All right, so how do you think this thing plays out when it's all said and done? Do the Rays take this thing down?
I do think it goes 7. You know, I've been pretty adamant about that even before the series really started off. My heart wants to say Rays. Again, it's very hard to pick against that Dodgers, the batting lineup against what the Rays have at the plate. Brandon Lau getting going makes me feel better about it because that's their best hitter. He was the regular season MVP, and he was awful this postseason. So for him to get 2 home runs and get his mojo back was a huge deal, huge boost for this club, and I think it'll benefit them. But, you know, if you're going 7 games and you see Buehler on the mound in game 7 for the Dodgers and what they have with Mookie Betts and some of these cats at the plate, it's hard to pick against the Dodgers in 7. But, you know, hey, again, my heart says that anything can happen. My head says Dodgers in 7.
Okay. We're talking to Zach Blobner, DAE, in Tampa. Tell me, the Bucks. Tom Brady, I know, listen, we watched Joe Montana come to Kansas City. We're seeing the phenomenon of Patrick Mahomes happen right now, so I know what getting a, you know, a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback kind of means in both kind of spectrums there that we've seen it happen here in Kansas City. When he lost his cool and blew up on the O-line and then couldn't remember how many downs, you know, that they were on fourth down, What was the reaction from the fans in Tampa? Was it still "We love you, Tom"? You can do no wrong, or did they get a little visceral at that point?
It was a little indifferent. You know, I wouldn't say fans were upset with it. They definitely weren't just okay with it. They weren't comfortable with it. And you know, you couple that with the fact that he didn't walk over to shake Nick Foles' hand after the game, and you mentioned he had blown up on his offensive lineman just prior to that blunder. There was a little bit of, again, I don't want to say resentment, but it was just they weren't okay with it. They weren't comfortable with it. And it was a matter of, look, you're Tom Brady. And it's been this way with him since he's really got here. Everybody's really excited to have him in town, the media, the fans, everybody, businesses. But on the same hand, you got to win ball games. And if you're losing, I don't care if you're Tom Brady or not, fans aren't going to be all gung-ho and happy. And it was doomsday for the fans, basically, after the Bears lost. And Tom Brady holding up the 4 fingers was kind of like the cherry on top. That was the face of that loss. And, you know, had that team and him not been able to bounce back against the Packers on Sunday the way that they did, I think fans would still be kind of wondering if they were even going to see a postseason here in Tampa Bay. But that's what Tom Brady does for you. He gets a little bit more leash. So fans are, even though they're upset about a loss, they're willing to be patient, I think is the word I'm looking for. And obviously that patience paid off when the Packers came to town.
What kind of, how much do they make Tom Brady available? I'm just curious. When he comes in, is he given like the rock star status and you barely ever talk to him, or is he pretty much available?
The rock star status for sure. And now listen, yeah, he's been very nice. And clearly this year is so different. Like, I would have loved to see what he was like at training camp where we get tons of extra access to all the players. But as far as, you know, the Zoom calls and post game, and I mean, we've heard him in a press conference, I think, last week. He literally told the PR guy, like, hey, 2 more questions and I'm out. And again, he's really nice to us, but he has full control over how much, what he says to the media, everything. He has rock star status for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, listen, he's earned it, right? 6 Super Bowls,
exactly.
6 Super Bowl wins, 9 Super Bowl appearances. The guy's earned it. All right, do you have any doubt that they will win the NFC South? I mean, how much do the Saints scare you?
Yeah, Saints are a really good team. And obviously the Saints took week 1 against the Bucs. I think that I was pretty confident the Bucs would end the year as the better team, but start the year clearly as the team in second place in this division in the NFC South. So far, that holds true. You know, the Saints have some issues going on their team with getting Michael Thomas healthy, getting him back. Drew Brees is having some arm questions as far as can he still throw the deep ball? Where's his arm strength at? Now, the Bucs have some issues, chemistry-wise, health-wise themselves, but they're going to continue to get better. I don't know how much better the Saints can get. Like, they have their team in place, and again, they're missing Michael Thomas, But as soon as he's back into the mix here at some point or another, that bump, we've seen it. We know what to expect. I think Brady and this Bucs team and this defense, which is elite right now, is only going to continue to grow. And as soon as now he's got Chris Godwin back in the mix, gets his timing down with some of these receivers more, which he's already found what it seems like with Mike Evans, you're just going to expect this Bucs team to be the best team in the NFC South at the end of the year. And I don't see the Saints derailing that. It'll be interesting to see if New Orleans can keep up in their next matchup with the Bucs after they took the first one at week one.
What is the feeling on how long Brady's going to play, on how long he's going to be a Buck? Same thing with Arians, because everyone kind of views, it seems like, as outsiders, the view is that neither one of them is going to be there that long.
Yeah, so he signed for a two-year deal. I think all Bucs fans were like, okay, well, at least 2 years. I think the expectation, if you kind of start to read the tea leaves of some of the different times he's talked to the media here, is that it could potentially be like an extra year or two at the most after that. And Bruce has alluded to, you know, he thinks Brady could play for another couple, 2 or 3 years after, you know, the 2 year deal that he has. And Brady certainly mentioned some things along those lines. So if things go well and the relationships haven't soured and there is some success, I wouldn't be shocked to see both Brady and Bruce go another year, potentially two, but at least another year, and totality wise, make it about 3 full years in Tampa Bay together. And then Bruce, whether he jumps ship when Brady does or sticks around an extra year after the fact before handing the reins off to a guy like Byron Leftwich as OC, that wouldn't shock me either. So they're not completely tied at the hip, but clearly they're both on the tail end of things, and they're hoping to win sooner rather than later. And I don't know if Brady's going to leave Tampa after he finishes up. He might keep his home down here and retire.
Yeah, well, the weather sucks, right? Why you gotta, you don't want any part of that, right? So like if Byron Leftwich is the, you know, the next in line, it's like Blaine Gabbert clearly would then take over. Former Missouri Tiger Blaine Gabbert would take over for Brady at quarterback, right?
Yeah, for sure. He's the chosen one. We're waiting for him to just kind of take over. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, though. I worked in Jacksonville before coming to Tampa for a few years, and I have forever went to bat for Blaine Gabbert as just not having a fair shake in the NFL, because I truly believe if he wasn't buried on such a bad Jags team, and even now, look at that organization. I mean, they've just ruined so many players. I think Gabbert never got a fair shake. I think he would have actually had a chance to be a legitimate starting franchise quarterback somewhere if he didn't start his career in Jacksonville. But that's a different story for another time.
When your team name is an acronym for mediocrity, just a guy, right, Jags, like, aren't you doomed?
Oh, it's so bad. And God bless the fans up there. I mean, the small percentage that there is, they're so passionate. But the organization is just, it's so awfully ran. And, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be one of those things we look back on. Somehow they made it to an AFC championship game and were like a player or two away from beating the Patriots and going to the Super Bowl. And then they just completely blew it all up. Like, only the Jags could do something like that.
Yeah, only the Jags. I like it. Zach Blobner is our guest from DAE in Tampa. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. You have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury? The University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. They've added extended hours during the week and have a Saturday morning walk-in clinic and OP. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Four quickies for you, Zach. Just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind. The Bucks, yet again, alter their uniform this year. On a scale of 1 to 10, you'd give this uniform a what?
7.
But the creamsicles.
I'm still waiting for the creamsicles. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I want them. Here's the problem. And Bruce Arians has brought this up multiple times. He wants to do the creamsicle throwback for a game or two, but you're only allowed to have the one helmet in the NFL. So until they change that rule, which it looks like they could potentially do next year, we're not going to see the creamsicles again until then. But I'm holding on hope.
Or they could just dislodge their head from their rectum and go back to those uniforms all the time.
I love them. Look, I'm all for it, man. You got my support. I love those uniforms.
Okay, good. Everybody seems to love them except for, I guess, ownership or something. I don't know what the problem is. All right, tell me, in Tampa, rank the Rays, Bucks, and Lightning by fan appreciation.
Bucks, Rays, Lightning, for sure. And it's interesting because the Lightning had all these sellouts. But football is king. The Bucks are definitely king. That's no debate. And I think that the Rays just cover more space. I think that the Lightning fan base is more passionate. But it's a smaller sliver when you compare it to the baseball fan base. But Bucks, Rays, Bolts for sure.
Who's the Bucks' biggest rival?
Probably the Saints. You know, and obviously being in the division, that's an easy one for me. But there's a hatred for New Orleans around here. And look, Cam Jordan's trash talk certainly spirals that out a little bit extra from New Orleans. So definitely the Saints.
Okay. And finally, when do the Rays get a new stadium?
Are we talking about in Tampa Bay or just in general? Because I don't know if we're ever going to see one in Tampa Bay. Here's the thing. Their lease is up in a couple of years, I believe, two or three. So either way, in the next 10 years, we'll definitely see the Rays playing somewhere new. It appears that we'll know where that's at in the next five, unless something crazy miraculous happens. So we're about still probably 3 or 4 years away from something being for sure, but less than five.
Okay. All right. We'll find out. Look forward to seeing whatever ends up being the case when it's all said and done. Zach, hey, great stuff, man. We really appreciate the time. Enjoy the World Series. Enjoy the sports scene down there. It's a great time for sure, and we really appreciate you sharing some of your time with us.
Thanks for having me. We'll see Mahomes and the Chiefs here in a few weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be a great game. Hell, maybe we'll see the two of them in the Super Bowl playing down there in Tampa as well. Zach Blobner from DAE in Tampa does a great job covering all the Tampa sports, talking about the Bucks as well as the Rays. Rays have the night off tonight. Of course, you'll hear the World Series right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thursday Night Football tonight on 810. Boy, you don't want to miss this one. Giants and Eagles. I will tell you, it's on 810 if you're keeping track of your fantasy team, because it might be a night that you want to run some errands. It's not exactly two of the heavyweights going at it. But, hey, fantasy football and betting, there's always a reason to watch the NFL. And if you're out and about, you'll hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the home of the National Football League.
The program with Soren Petro.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Know-It-All.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
All right, college basketball right around the corner, right? We're watching the trials and tribulations Major League Baseball has had, the NFL, college football, a lot of trials and tribulations. And college basketball is up next as we head into the cold and flu season, the infection rate rising. Right now, the difficulty that lies ahead for college basketball. Marquette has had to pause their basketball season this week. Bill Self was on a Zoom conference call today. He says, you're not going to be able to avoid stoppages this season.
I don't believe the NCAA, I think that they are concerned about our season without question. But I think the NCAA has been giving – advice and information from experts outside the NCAA that have the best feel on the safest way to proceed. I don't think the NCAA changing how they do things to open themselves up to possible things down the road, unless they were 100% sure, and they can't be 100% sure without the medical world behind them. So our season will get interrupted this year. I'm not saying Kansas's, but our basketball season, the way we know it, will not come off, at least in my opinion, because of the testing protocols. And I don't see those testing protocols changing based on, you know, several teams getting knocked out or having to postpone games or cancel games. I don't think the medical experts will be making decisions based on college athletics.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I say we in the outdoors in the time of the year where everyone was outside mostly in their spare time, every sport that is played so far has had some kind of a stoppage. If we think that there's going to be no stoppages at a time where everyone's going to spend 95% of their time indoors and the games are played indoors during a situation where there are more viruses anyway, it's absolutely going to be stoppages, probably more than there have been so far.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I think about Bill Self saying that. I think about the same way I thought about Bob Bowlsby saying, hey, here's what's coming.
Yeah.
Like, I feel more confident that Bill Self has said that because he's acknowledging that there are going to be trials and tribulations, but there clearly seems to be a focus and a plan and a want to play the season and that there are going to be bumps and it's going to be difficult and it's going to be different from anything we've seen. But they think that they've got a way to do it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I always appreciate, you know, people that are in positions of authority being honest, right? And I think all of us are like, okay, I got it, right? We're not going to melt if all of a sudden we know that there's going to be some problems. We want college basketball. I feel better that they're acknowledging. Like I said, Bob Bowlsby was like one of the first guys. Everybody else was talking about like how we were going to play this NFL season with zero positive tests, right? That was supposed to be the goal. That's an impossibility. When you acknowledge, hey, we're going to have interruptions. They're probably going to be swapping games, right? Kentucky got moved up a week on Missouri or got moved into the place of the Florida game. Those things are going to have to take place in college basketball, but they have the capabilities to do it. So hopefully we're going to get a college basketball season. And, you know, the tournament to me seems like something that you could probably do in a bubble. It's probably a long way down the road to worry about thinking. Maybe it's a smaller tournament, but I think we've got a chance.